numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is A Numbers Game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com. Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, the DraftKings Network. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9. So much more than a producer. Live from Bar Canada at the D. It's happening. Good?
Not much, man. Not much.
We have any Wu-Tang updates, by the way? Anything from that? No, nothing? Someone was asking me yesterday.
No, except I did watch. Have you heard of this tiny desk thing?
Oh, sure. Of course. Did they do one?
They did one.
Oh, no.
They did one. I watched it.
Oh, no.
I went down that rabbit hole like last week. I watched like 4 of those. I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh,
clearly, they've been
totally
doing it for years.
Thing. Oh, yeah. It's great.
You know, like normal human beings probably know all about it, yeah. But like we just lock in on sports.
Like 25 minutes of your favorite artist doing something in a small space.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Some of the people I went through. But yeah, Wu-Tang was one of them. They were one of them.
We'll see. On the show today, speaking of Wu-Tang, Steve Fezzik's on the show today. I have no idea what that just meant. Steve Fezzik will be here. He'll talk about his bracket tenets, little NIT thought from him and how he bets that. He's got all kinds of philosophies on stuff, as Stevie does. So he'll be here beginning next hour. We're thrilled to have him. We're always thrilled to have him
yeah.
in the studio.
Love Steve.
Yeah.
He's always a guy you can learn from.
Oh, he's the best.
Be entertained from.
Fantastic radio. Patrick and Dustin have him on Sharp Money all the time.
Yep.
So
yeah, every Monday.
So lucky for them. And so we get a dose of that this morning with Stevie, the only back-to-back Hilton Super Contest winner. He'll be on later on the show. Jason Weingarten, of course. Drew Dinsick on the NBA, college hoops, tennis, I don't know, golf. We'll see what we'll talk to Drew about coming up. Bunch of stuff here. One, can I start with a bet? Is that allowed? With a tennis bet?
Go for it.
Having a great tennis year, as y'all know. Just shy of 20 units to the positive in match play. Little up on the futures as well. Ziga's gone 2 for 2. Back at Miami, we're in the Miami Open starting today on the ladies' side. Miami Open is the second half of what they call the Sunshine Double in tennis, which is Indian Wells in California, and then Miami begins here, basically week and a half tournaments, if you will. They're about as close to slams, at least, you know, Indian Wells called the fifth slam by de facto, the tennis's fifth slam, but Miami is not too far behind that. So the Sunshine Double, Iga won this Sunshine Double a couple years ago. It's only been done 4 times where someone has won both at Indian Wells and at Miami on the ladies' side. Iga's trying to do it for the second time. I think only Steffi Graf has done it twice before. I took her, and let me just admit this up front. We're getting to the point with Iga where the numbers to win the tournaments are getting really comically short now. She's plus 175, or that's what I got her at yesterday, to win the Miami Open. And even I will admit that this is getting to a number that gets a little dicier. From the days of hitting her at 33-1s in tournaments, you know, down to double digits, low double digits, to high single digits, to couple bucks now, you know, $2 or $3 now, or plus 175 to win the Miami Open. I did this sort of out of I just didn't want to not have it obligation. Is it a sound mathematical wager? I probably could tell you that it's not. But plus 175 is what I got it yesterday. As it turns out, it's a better price than it is this morning. And a tick of that has to do with this unbelievable tragedy that happened. Aryna Sabalenka's boyfriend died.
And oh, yeah, I saw that.
42 years old, so yeah. I don't know if she's playing or not. But for whatever reason, Iga's number incrementally went down. I wouldn't play her at anything lower than what I got her at. So if you can find a straight plus 175. It was only available, that number, at a few shops here yesterday. William Hill, Boyd, and Stations. Everybody else was even shorter. So I do have that in pocket. But as far as a play today, this is one where it's, you know, I do everything based off the raw data. This is one where it's like, okay, Simona Halep hasn't played tennis in almost 2 years, at least hasn't played a hard court tournament in over a year and a half. When she did play back in the day, oh, she was very good. Very good. She won her appeal from doping, so she's back on tour. This is her first match back, and she's playing Paula Badosa. I got her at minus 130, talking about Simona Halep now. Simona Halep, who was a top 10 player in the world, got her at minus 130 yesterday. She's about minus 136 now. Still playable. I wouldn't let it get past the minus 130s, though. Don't let it do that. And the reason I'm going ahead and taking a flyer on this, even though she hasn't played a hardcore tournament or a hardcore match in over a year and a half, is because Badosa is chronically hurt. And this is one of those situations where it's sad to say about Badosa, who was really at the top of her game a few years back, but she's got multiple injuries that she's been dealing with, calf, abductor. The latest is a lower back stress fracture in her L4 vertebrae, and she's still dealing with that. She dealt with it all the second half of last year. So if she were in perfect health, I probably wouldn't play this, but since she's not, Halep's the better player, more reliable here even. Yeah, she's been practicing the whole time she's been out. So Halep is the play at minus 130. I would play her still at minus 135 or minus 136, whatever she is right now. So that's a comeback to tennis play after what was a great, absolutely great tournament for us at Indian Wells.
What did they ever figure out with her? Was there anything more that happened with her appeal and coming back to the tour?
Tennis players, when they appeal their doping bans, have an unbelievably high rate of having that appeal successful.
How long was she out for?
She was out for 9 months, I believe.
I feel like you and I have had this conversation a lot of, like, there's people that, especially in this town, that just sue for everything, and I don't really understand it, but oh my gosh, would I be suing some people if I was Simona Halep?
Yeah.
Like, you kept me out of that game that I can make a lot of money in for 9 months?
On the other hand, you're so happy to be back and you can make money playing if you're that good. Do you even bother with that?
Yeah.
You would.
Yeah, I would.
Well, I don't know if Simona Halep will.
I would. I can't find anything on Sabalenka. I mean, it's tough to believe that she'd be playing, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, her father died a few years ago, was 43 years old, and her boyfriend at 42 dies, and it's just awful.
She is not currently listed as a match to bet at DraftKings, and the futures are down as well.
Not that Swiatek wasn't the short shot with Sabalenka, right, but that would remove, obviously, and we hate to even... I get it as we're talking about this. It's the most callous thing in the world. A man died, and we're talking about betting implications. But that is the corner of the world from which we come. The other thing that happened yesterday big time was Blake Snell. Yankees? Nope. San Francisco Giants. And I believe we talked about this. We did last week when I had the Bengals division bet. I also told you I made the three Giants bets. And one of the things I mentioned was, and there's the outside shot that they end up with Blake Snell. And they do. So the Giants numbers, I have the World Series. I have them win the World Series at 53+1. It's 40-1 now. Happen to win the NL at 27-1. It's 21-1 now. And to make the playoffs, I had +172. That's a little shorter now, +146. Not nearly as sexy. And of course, as I noted then, no chance in you know where that I'll ever play them to win the division, because they ain't beaten the Dodgers over 162 games. But somebody's got to make it as a wild card in the NL. And if you have a team like the Giants... This is even before Snell. I thought those were good numbers. And they do get Snell. It's a two-year deal. On paper, it's a two-year deal for $62 million. 10 days before the team opens its regular season against his former one, the San Diego Padres, Jeff Passan was the first to report that. The deal does include an opt-out after the first season, though, for Snell. So it's really a one-year deal. But when you're talking about the Giants now, by the way, Snell's their number two starter. He ain't their number one. Logan Webb is your one, Blake Snell two, Kyle Harrison three. All of a sudden, your rotation looks pretty good. And by the way, I'm the first guy to say that Blake Snell winning the Cy Young. You know me. I was on Strider. Snell did the most smoke and mirrors job ever to win a Cy Young last year. Do I expect him to be able to do that again next year, this coming year, starting in 10 days? I do not. But you don't go from smoke and mirrors to necessarily sucking.
Yeah, he's still
there's
a damn
spectrum.
Good pitcher, yeah.
So you still add that arm in that rotation. That's great. Not to mention the fact that the Giants, who were offensively anemic last year, and Adam Burke wrote a beautiful piece. He was doing all his MLB previews. He happened to send me yesterday, before the Snell signing, sent me his Giants one yesterday. And he did a fantastic. I mean, he does the best baseball previews that are out there. And I'm serious, like ever. But he also points out, of course, offensively, Jorge Soler and Matt Chapman added in terms of power. Are they going to lead the league in homers? They're not. But for the Giants, that's a huge power boost. And Matt Chapman, as Adam points out, had the best hard hit percentage in all of baseball. Barrel percentage is great. Hard hit percentage is the best in all of baseball. So he actually deserved better in Toronto. Of course, Farhan Zaidi and the Giants noticed such things. And then Jung-Hoo Lee from the Korean League, who's a contact hitter. So offensive... And for reinforcements as well. So I like the Giants and all those plays. Again, not to win the division. No. Even the most Giants diehard will tell you that ain't going to happen. But to make the playoffs, and then once the playoffs happen, this is the thing about baseball. When you hear someone say, oh, I happen to win the World Series and to win the pennant, it's not as nutty as you think because there's best of threes and best of fives. And so teams that are far better over 162, as we've discussed incessantly, can fall. And so that's why the Giants are a trio of bets for me. Everything but the division, quite frankly. I didn't bet the season win total either. So it's playoffs, NL, and World Series for me. You have an NBA bet?
Yes, I do. Real shocker here. I'm on the Pelicans tonight. I feel like I've bet them like 8 times in the past 2 weeks. They're on the road against the Nets, laying 7.5 right now. I did lay 7 with them. This is a team in New Orleans who is red hot right now. You are talking 6-1 in their last 7, second best net rating in the league over that time. Top 3 offensively and defensively. Brooklyn, I've been picking on for the past couple months, it feels like, at this point. But they are in a rough spot right now, 3-6 over their last 9. Bottom 10 offense and defense of what they're looking like right now. A couple days of rest for the Pelicans. So they got a bunch of games they're playing this week. Rolling into Brooklyn tonight, I think they're going to smash the Nets. I'll be looking for first half when it gets posted as well. Pelicans been one of the best first half teams in the league the entire season.
All right. We'll talk a bunch of college basketball coming up with Steve Fezzik. Drew Dinsick as well, who will join us next. Also going to talk, see if he has any tennis plays, I should say, as well. But also NBA, and yeah, he wasn't willing to have a Victor Wembanyama Defensive Player of the Year conversation with me a couple weeks back. Will he now? Just throw some more stats. Utah seemed to do okay defensively without Gobert again last night. What do you know? Huh. That's interesting.
Minnesota.
Drew's next. Numbers Game. Visa. The Sports Betting Network. The tournament tips off. Start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today and get your first year for only $199 instead of the typical price of $240. Just use promo code ANG. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for an entire year. That includes our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus our March Mania betting guide with best bets for every game and round of the tournament. Remember, though, to use promo code ANG.
ANG, like a numbers game, folks.
Get your first year of VSiN Pro access for only $199. Got to use ANG, though. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. You faked me out.
Been tightening them up on you recently. Yeah.
That's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Gil Alexander. This, ladies and gentlemen, is Drew Dinsick. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. He's the host of not one but two podcasts, The Deep Dive with Drew and Andy Molitor, and, of course, the NBC Sports beautiful podcast, Bet the Edge, with Jay Croucher and Drew Dinsick. He comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Drew?
I am tremendously well. It was not exactly a rest and recuperating weekend for me. I went down to Savannah, celebrated St. Patrick's Day with my brother and his friends. And I tell you what, man, I thought I knew cities that knew how to throw a party. And Savannah, St. Patrick's Day is it's encroaching on the number one power rated party experience as far as like just, you know, Mardi Gras in Vegas or, you know, Mardi Gras in New Orleans or, you know, March Madness weekend in Vegas coming up, you know, like there's like certain experiences and I'm starting to sort it all out. But boy, oh boy, 200th anniversary of their St. Patrick's Day parade. And it was a wild scene.
You nonchalanted that. You're talking about Savannah, Georgia, I assume. You went from California to Savannah? You're like, I just went down
to
Savannah.
Got back last night. Yep.
Savannah, very underrated party town.
Yeah,
I have not done the St. Patty's Day yet, Drew, but I've been there a couple times and had a very good time in that city.
Wow.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
The always traveling Drew Dinsick. What a life he leads. It's a very interesting life. and good on you. Let's talk. We have a bunch of sports to talk about here, Drew. Let's talk real quick about tennis. I mentioned Aryna Sabalenka's boyfriend has passed away. Not sure if she's playing or not. Do you have any tennis plays today at all?
We're still qualifying, right? The actual action starts on Wednesday, I believe.
The women start today.
Oh, the women start today. Okay. Yeah. Men's is still qualifying.
That's correct.
That tells you that I have not handicapped the first round of this tennis tournament.
Okay. I've only
looked at the macro stuff. And honestly, like when the news hit the wire about Sabalenka's boyfriend, I mean, I would be absolutely blown away if she plays here. And like, man, I'm digging hard for details on exactly what happened there. If that was just like accidental death, like, You know, they were partying and fentanyl got in the, you know, the party stash or whatever. Like, that's one thing, I guess. But, like, you know, she's got like a weird international, you know, kind of centrally important role with what Belarus is doing, supporting Russia, invading Ukraine, and all sorts of that stuff. And yeah, there could be some weird things going on there that I'm very curious about. I would be blown away, you know, and the fact that it happened in Miami, we'd be absolutely blown away if she plays there. So, you know, the easy and obvious answer was you got to crash Iga's price. I don't think realistically Rybakina or Goff are in good enough form right now to win this tournament, with Rybakina having taken entirely taken off at Indian Wells and Coco Gauff's form that we've seen for the entirety of 2024 so far. The rest of the top eight are all huge question marks. Even Sakkari, who is showing some signs of life, is still not good enough to win this tournament. So if you don't have Iga in pocket, I'm probably swinging for the fences here a little bit. I took a 50-1 price on Naomi Osaka, who's in as a protected ranking and gets Cochiaretto round one, and then Svitolina round two, potentially Garcia round three, and then Coco Gauff round four. Like, that's a winnable draw for her. And I know that, like, we're sitting around waiting for something to happen. Come on, Osaka, do something. This is it. Like, this is the court speed and the type of conditions that really favor her game if she's going to emerge, if she's going to win anything or have any, you know, just any good run of form. It's going to have to happen here at Miami, because we are about to go to clay and she does not perform well on clay. And then, you know, if we get into the fall and she hasn't accumulated any points, then she's going to be in a little bit of trouble. The comeback kind of sputters on the vine. So hopeful that Osaka could do something interesting here, but very, very tough to see anyone beating Iga right now.
Yeah, it's a good call on Osaka, though. This is much faster surface here than it was at Indian Wells. And so, yeah, before clay, one final salvo for Naomi to see if she can reach back and get that form that she had that took her to four hardcourt Grand Slams back in the day. All right, college hoops. We talked last week about, hey, do you do anything with college hoops? And you're like, no, I wait for the brackets, and then I go crazy. What have you done here? I believe that's a quote, Drew.
Yeah, well, I mean, the bracket, I like, you know, the without question, the I think macro thoughts, this looks like a balanced draw, right? There's not there's no region of death. Last year, the West was the region of death, where they put basically everybody with a pulse all in the same region. And then that opened up the entire other side of the bracket. Now, Connecticut came out of the region of death and won the title, so you didn't exactly scoop any, you know, huge advantage there. But ultimately, this looks much more balanced. I think the hardest region is Connecticut's region in the East. Surprise, surprise, the committee is challenging the defending title winner, really trying to make them prove it if they can go back-to-back, as opposed to, you know, giving them a well-earned number one seed. But that's fine. I think I hold Ohio State up as the of the best of the twos. I hold Auburn up as a very, very competitive four. I think Northwestern potentially winning that game against FAU. The 8-9 matchup for Connecticut looks tough. So basically, Connecticut looks like they have tests at round of 32, round of 16, and the Elite Eight potentially on tap. If they go through that, congratulations. But I'm going to bet against Connecticut at price. I just think this is, a lot of opportunity for them to find themselves into trouble. And then to me, I look at the West, I see total chaos. That looks like the softest of the regions, because I see North Carolina as a fatally flawed team. They sort of have not as strong as, say, Purdue. Not as strong as, say, Creighton or Illinois, but they do have one of sort of the telltale signs of upset is on the nigh, and that is that they don't force defensive turnovers at an effectively high rate. They are 307th in the country in turnover rate on defense, and that's a problem, as we talked about last week, because if you come up against a team that is shooting well from three, if you come up against a 6-10 point deficit in the second half, like they did against NC State, then you need to be able to force defensive turnovers to give yourself extra possessions. If you are not forcing defensive turnovers, you at least need to be elite at offensive rebounding to give yourself extra possessions. And they're just good at that. So I think North Carolina potentially could get upset before they get too deep into this tournament, which opens the door for something else crazy to happen in the West. I took a shot on St. Mary's to get to the Final Four. Overall, just the slower tempo that they play at, and their ability to just, you know, just in general create offense in different ways. They're, you know, experienced elite bigs. They're an elite offensive rebounding team. There's just kind of in general a lot to like about St. Mary's for me as a five seed, and I think they match up well against a four seed in Alabama, who is truly like defense optional. So I think St. Mary's can come through the West, and I took a shot there. I think Houston is the team to beat for the tournament broadly. I have outrights on them and have not taken any other, you know, outright winner in that market to this point. And we'll see if I ultimately have kind of talked myself into a terrible bet. But I think the South region is set up very well for them with a relatively weak two seed in Marquette and you know, problematic three seed in Kentucky. And, you know, of the different regions, the 4-5 that I see as the weakest is right there in the South. I think James Madison very well could emerge from that 4-5, 12-13 setup there. And, you know, both Wisconsin and Duke to me are kind of fatally flawed contenders. So I took a shot on James Madison to get to the Sweet 16. And then finally, really, really tough to come up with the answer for the Midwest for me. I know that it looks like they set this up for Purdue to find a little bit of, I don't know what's the right word is, but like the Virginia arc, you know, yes, where they get upset 1 year as the 16 seed, and then the next year they go on a run and win a title finally in Eddie's the final season. But they still have a, you know, fundamental flaw in their ability to create defensive turnovers. So if they're playing somebody who's playing well, like, best of luck to them. I took a swing on Tennessee in the Midwest, but it's a pretty low confidence swing. So my final four would be Houston over Tennessee. I guess UConn over St. Mary's, and then I have Houston winning the whole thing.
All right. St. Mary's to win their region, JMU to get to the Sweet 16, not having UConn win the title. Some of the highlights there from Drew. By the way, just refresh my memory. We're in the same survivor pool, yes? Are we?
Oh, yeah. You tipped me to this.
That's right. I forgot.
Way cool.
Yeah.
Yes, way cool.
It's the coolest thing.
Yeah, really, really cool format. And if you haven't already played College Basketball Survivor, like, you know, look up the rules, start with your friends, or, you know, just ask around, because it is an incredibly fun way to play the tourney.
I'm going to say it's the most fun thing ever, like, for anything. Yeah. It is just fantastic because it's multidimensional. You got to make sure you have teams left at the end besides just the survival part of it. NBA, NFL, with Drew on the other side. We continue on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Get ready to dominate the brackets. Turn your picks into profits this tournament with the VSiN Pro March Mania Betting Guide. Inside this guide, you'll find expert strategies, insider tips, and in-depth analysis that'll give you the edge you need to outshine the competition. From underdog upsets to championship predictions, the VSiN Pro Betting Guide will have brackets from hosts and experts, NCAA tournament betting trends, and, of course, best bets for every round of the tournament. Don't miss out on this game-changing resource. Download the VSiN Pro March Mania Betting Guide today at VSiN.com/madness. That's VSiN.com/madness. That was a very bad imitation of Hootie. I just did. Remember the PGA guy down at the Masters? Hootie Johnson? Be like, tournament. Sounded like Foghorn Leghorn down there. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Drew Dinsick, kind enough to join us for a second segment. Again, at @whale_capper, Deep Dive Podcast, and of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge. By the way, do you have this is the worst question I've ever asked in my life. Jay and Andy aren't listening. Do you have a podcast you prefer on any given week? Like, are you more into one sometimes and the other one at others?
Ooh. I mean, the format for the deep dive is more my control, right? Like, we talk about what we want. Like, I feel like it's a little bit more hidden, right? So
yeah,
we can kind of take some shots. Like last week we did a whole NFL free agency podcast where it was a little tongue in cheek, but we just gave failing grades to every GM and just called out everybody and across the entire NFL. Like, you're stupid. You're terrible. You don't know what you're doing. What's the vision here?
That's the deep dive.
I heard most of that. Drew went scorched earth on the entire NFL.
I wouldn't feel great doing that on the NBC pod, 'cause I feel like we might get a phone call.
Yeah.
But the NBC pod is a more digestible format. Like, it's more for, you know, for kind of and especially the people, everybody's got a job. Like, you don't have time to sit down and listen to us bloviate for 2 hours about NFL free agency, right? So sit down, daily 30-minute bites. We're trying to keep it shorter, but we'll see. The format's more for everybody on the Bet the Edge, but the stretch and the legs on the deep dive is kind of more my style.
Since you bring up NFL free agency, was there anything you did like?
This was so tough. The Chiefs re-signing Chris Jones. I don't even really know that anything else moves the needle in terms of championship equity besides the Chiefs bringing back Jones.
We talked about this last week. That was the most significant thing, and I think you're right. Do you feel, I guess the follow-up to that is, do you feel like that's different from every other free agency period we've ever gone through? Like, I really feel like this one was kind of the biggest nothing burger ever.
It was. Well, that's a funny thing. This was the highest volume, least impactful.
Right.
Like, it's both hand in hand. Like, funny trends in free agency are now everybody is just 1 year. 1 year. And if you have more than 1 year, there's just like sprinkled with void years. Like there's the contract structure and the kind of the vision for both what teams are trying to do and what agents and players are willing to accept has completely changed. You're going to have something like, double the amount of contracts this year issued during the free agency period than you had 5 years ago. And the length of those contracts has gone down from what, two to three years to just almost all of them, like one, with just a sparingly few that are, longer than 1 year. And it's a funny way to do business. And I'm not 100% sure I understand like the strategy behind it. But everybody is like a little bit afraid, I think, to put themselves into a box where they all of a sudden they have the bad contract that they're paying from two free agencies ago, to a player who's well over the hill. And everybody is kind of seeing like, okay, well, this is our time to win now. We need this. We need to plug this hole. We're going to go get that guy. But like the tried and true kind of thoughts on free agency is you're never really going to find the game changing player out there, because if there is a game changing player on a given team that is homegrown, they're going to keep that guy. You're never really going to find the true needle mover at the quarterback position. You're never really going to find the true needle mover, even really at, the other kind of premium positions. The lack of cornerbacks available in this market should tell you something. The lack of wide receiver ones available in this market should tell you something. The lack of, tight ends that you can, sign to long-term deals available should tell you something. There's very few elite pass rushers. Like really it felt like all of free agencies so far and all of the, shuffling of players was like, okay, backup quarterbacks first. Oh no, excuse me. Running backs first. We're all going to trade running backs, and then we're all going to figure out our backup quarterback position. And then we're going to nibble at other stuff. People spent 2 days digesting Kirk Cousins to the Falcons. Like nobody even thought to bring up the fact that the Falcons should have gotten absolutely skewered for not making a more sincere run at Lamar Jackson last year. Right. I haven't heard one person bring this up.
We brought it up.
And it's like this front office paid no consequence for coming out the day that he requested a trade or for the day that he got, franchise tagged, whatever the franchise tag where I can't remember exactly the classification because coming off of a bender, but the one where your compensation is fixed as two first rounders period, it's crazy to me that no one made a more sincere run at Lamar Jackson. Falcons at the top of that list because they're going to pay Kirk Cousins Lamar Jackson money this year. Who would you rather have? Kirk Cousins coming off an Achilles injury or the reigning MVP? Like this shouldn't be a tough calculus whatsoever. And I don't really understand how so many of these organizations are kind of what the vision is really in terms of how they see themselves competing this year. And like, they just think they're going to get lucky and that we're going to be this year's Lions, I guess. I don't know. What are you talking your owner into of like you're spending money on X, Y, or Z? So
The Falcons case, they get to say we're in the NFC South, so we can win the division, and then if we can only win two, we'll get a home playoff game. If we can only win that, then all of a sudden we're in maybe the championship game, or maybe the division round, whichever it is.
I got a weird opinion for you. If you had Lamar Jackson, you'd have two home playoff games. And guess what? They would be in the divisional round, and they would be in the championship round.
We brought it up.
The non-exclusive franchise.
Yeah. Non-exclusive. Thank you very much, Kevin. It's such a silly, and that was all collusion anyway. But anyway.
All right. Let me bring up something in basketball, because you were not really willing to have this conversation with me last time, so I'm going to just bring it up. Cleaning the glass.
Sure.
Spurs, 11.2 points per possession worse when Wemby is off the court than when he is. Wow. Spurs dead last defensively and historically bad when he's off. Minnesota and Rudy Gobert, 3.8 points per possession worse when he's off. So 11.2 versus 3.8. I should mention that Nikola Jokic, I think the Nuggets are 4.6 points or something like that worse when he's off the court, just to give you a sense of how amazing he is and where Gobert ranks in that category. Now we have the likes of Ryan Russillo, who has a vote for Defensive Player of the Year. He is going to vote for Wembanyama, he's saying now. Bill Simmons still is voting for Gobert. I just want to say last night, Minnesota gave up 104 points to Utah. Utah averages 117. Gobert was not playing. Anyway, you get the point. Wembanyama is really not going to win Defensive Player of the Year. You're sticking to that.
Oh, yeah. He is very squarely likely to get second. I think that is a very fine choice, is a very fair expectation. Maybe I'm the one that will ultimately look silly here, but they are clear Minnesota, clear number one defense in the NBA right now by, 2 points over the next 2 points plus over the next best defense. And it is anchored around Rudy Gobert as, the key, cog in the system. You can definitely find other reasons to say, well, yeah, without him, they are still elite. Yes. But, I think ultimately the Defensive Player of the Year is so closely correlated to a top five team defense. And in when you have a standout player that's as obvious as Rudy, he's just going to garner so many first place votes from of the voting.
But don't you agree?
Impossible to flip him.
I'm sorry to interrupt because we only have a few minutes, one minute left. But don't you agree that next year the Spurs aren't going to be that much better? No one's going to ever bring that up, and Wembanyama's going to win the award by a mile, right?
Probably. Although they might be that much better, honestly. Like if they do right by their draft capital, if they get the Raptors pick, if they have two in the top seven, or two in the top 10, I guess, that might be enough to ultimately help.
Maybe, but maybe not, right? Like even if they're still sub 500, no one's ever going to bring it up. Yeah.
With a full season of playing Wemby where he should be played, they might be just that much better.
Yeah.
Like they donked so much bad basketball when they were kind of using him as power forward and had him out there with another big, and that was just absurdity. And they figured it out in December, early December, mid December. I think ultimately he could, they could be a top five defense next year, and I wouldn't be entirely surprised just on merit. And at that point he could run away with it. And I think honestly a funner bet is like, how many years are we is it 3 years away that we have the double from Wemby of MVP and DPOY?
Oh, yeah.
Because
that's coming.
Probably coming.
That's coming. Five games in the NBA, Drew, real quick. Do you have a play on any of them?
I made all of these on market today, so I passed.
You passed. Okay. Drew Dinsick, everybody. Thank you, Drew, as always. Pleasure.
Hey, best of luck, you guys.
My man, Drew Dinsick, back from Savannah, Georgia.
Savannah.
At @whale_capper, deep dive with Andy Molitor, and of course, Bet the Edge from NBC Sports, both of his podcasts. Both great listens. We'll come back. Kelly and I talk about seeding, betting seeding props in March Madness. That's next. There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now and use code ANG when you sign up and earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager now. Quite an offer. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Jesse Welch. This is insane to me. At DraftKings, the Giants are 10-1 to win their division and 22-1 to win the pennant. I really feel like those odds should be flipped. I'm pretty high on your Giants, Gilly. Bentley, congrats on the guest line sponsorship. I'm surprised they didn't ask to exclude Felica due to his occasional use of two Dixie cups and a string. Sorry, Chris. Brad Billups. Come on, Gil. He's on the opposite side of this. He goes, the Giants will be under their win total in a complete fade. Snell regularly gets minimal run support. Logan Webb is the king of that, by the way. Chapman was heavily protected in the Jays lineup last year and hit 260-ish. Soler hasn't played a full season in a bit. Well, as I mentioned, with Chapman, actually had the best hard hit percentage in all of baseball last year. You keep doing that, big things are going to happen. Sometimes you get the worst of it luck-wise. And as I mentioned with Snell, I don't expect him to have the results that he did last year. But that doesn't mean he's going to also have poor run support. That is not something that transfers from year to year. He'll be right there as their number two starter. Ian McDonald, morning, gentlemen. My parents have lived in Savannah, Georgia for 20 years, and it's a very underrated place to visit. Their St. Patrick's Day celebration, however, is the second largest in the U.S. behind New York City.
Huh. Second largest?
I wonder why that is.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I would have guessed Chicago. Doesn't Chicago do a big one?
I don't know. I am not a St. Patrick's... I'm not a drinker, so I don't know this stuff.
You wouldn't catch me at a parade. That is all respect to Drew going down for that. Like, what he described, especially to us off air, that sounds like a nightmare. Too many people.
I'm the guy that has to be reminded 15 times that it's actually St. Patrick's Day. I have no relationship to it. D-Mill 32-19. Let's go, Gilly Ice. Miami Open. Yes, let's get it done starting today. And this one, Slice. Slice is on Drew's side. He goes, regarding Defensive Player of the Year conversation, Drew hits the nail on the head, although it's an indicated award. I think he means a individual award, probably a typo there, individual award. He's the straw that stirs the drink of the best defense. Last night, the Wolves gave up 37 in the first. MVP Ant was the difference in that small sample. By the way, we have that shot of Ant's dunk yesterday. It was unbelievable. I could repeat all those stats I just gave, or what I said to Drew, which is next year, if the Spurs are sub 500 again, maybe they're 5 games better, maybe they're 10 games better. No one's going to bring up the fact that they're bad. They're going to just hand it to them. So it's all complete narrative nonsense to me. He's clearly, it's not even close. He's by far the best defensive player in the NBA. It's not close. And even Jokic makes more of a difference defensively, as I just mentioned, on Denver than Gobert does on Minnesota. Here's that shot of Ant. Can we show this? This is Anthony Edwards' dunk yesterday. Is this over John Collins? Is that John Collins getting posterized? Oh, my God. That's one of those where...
Dislocated finger on the dunk, popped it back in, taped it up.
On his offhand, right? Yep. On his offhand, dislocated the finger, immediately looked down at it.
Yep.
But this is one of those where the most amazing dunks are the one where the defender... You're so high that the defender almost elevates you more. Wow. That's awesome.
So John Collins was one of the guys I covered while he was in high school playing ball. And he used to play in this small, tiny private school in West Palm Beach, Florida. Cardinal Newman, shout out. And he was the king of this in high school. It was like, oh,
dunking on others.
I was like, where's the 5'8" private school kid running around? I'm going to dunk all over this small kid. And it was like, he did it like 10 times a game. So I saw that live last night. That's all I could think about. I was like, yeah, that was a lot of years
coming.
That's awesome.
Where's the 5'8" kid? I want to dunk on him. John Collins, by the way, Summer League here? Summer League juggernaut. He was so good.
Yeah.
One of these summer leagues here. Real quick before we get to the seating props. I've gone 45 minutes. I haven't mentioned. We did the Megapod yesterday. Will Hill, Todd Wishnev, and I did the Beating the Book podcast, March Madness Megapod. By the way, just phenomenally well received. Last year, this was the podcast where Todd hit UConn to beat San Diego State in the final, and Will had Florida Atlantic in the Final Four. Like, if you go back and listen to it, it's just unbelievable. And Todd hit everything else besides that.
And you said yesterday via text to me that there was just as aggressive selections
so,
this year?
Yeah. So,
I don't know why my voice is getting higher.
I don't know either. I'm a little worried about this. We have a medical event happening with Kelly. No, they did not talk to each other before the podcast. And let's just say we're about to do these, you know, which seed to win the tournament prop. I'm not going to give away, if you haven't listened to the Beating the Book Megapod with Will Todd and me, they landed on the same long shot.
Okay. I thought you were going to say they landed on something in this market.
They
for
did,
a
but I'm not going to give away okay, which right. one it is because I want you to go listen to like that.
Like on the pod, they specifically brought up this market.
No, this market was okay, not okay, brought okay. up. But we're going to talk about you know the odd. Look, we could just throw it up right now. By the way, again, beating the book Megapod with the March Madness, the latest episode. So this is which seed will end up winning the title. And no surprise that the number one seed is the favorite here. Obviously, the number one seeds that are in this tournament, UConn, Houston, Purdue, and Carolina. You get the one seed bet here for minus 130. Two seeds are the next shot here at plus 350. Iowa State, Arizona, Marquette, and Tennessee. By the way, I know you when Drew said Ohio State, you flinched. You meant Iowa State when he was talking about two seeds.
Gil and I knew we know each other too well. I definitely did, but I was like, there's no way that was noticeable at all.
Yeah, no, I totally noticed. I noticed you noticing it.
I actually wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if you said Ohio or Iowa.
I think you said Ohio, but you meant Iowa.
Yeah.
Four. Okay, now it doesn't go to the three seed next. The four seeds are actually the next short shot at 7-1. And the four seeds are Auburn, Bama, Duke, and Kansas. That's followed by the three seed grouping at 10-1. The three seeds, Illinois, Baylor, Kentucky, and Creighton.
And I'm not going to say this is why, Gil, right? But you have 2-4 seeds ranked higher in KenPom ratings than before you get to a three seed.
Well, Auburn is the big differentiator there, right?
Right.
Auburn is a four seed in this tournament. They're number four overall in KenPom, and they're, what, sixth on the big board to win it all?
Mm-hmm. Well, then even Duke, too, right? Duke's eighth overall at KenPom, and they're a four seed.
So that's why four seeds are shorter than three seeds. By the way, five seeds are next, 25-1. That's the group that includes San Diego State, St. Mary's, Wisconsin, and Gonzaga. And then you will see sevens shorter than sixes and nines shorter than eights. Sevens are the group that includes Florida. I don't really know why in this case, because sevens over sixes, because in sevens cases, you have it's Wazoo, Dayton, Florida, and Texas. Sixes are BYU, Clemson, Texas Tech, and South Carolina. I would actually think to myself, just on that six seeds at 40-1 is a far better bet than seven seeds at 35-1. Because I think that group of six seeds, I'm a big BYU guy, and let me give away one thing that was stated on the podcast. Todd really likes South Carolina.
Okay. I was going to say, if you're even considering, I think, a bet in that range, you know, once you get down to what, the 5, 7, 6, 9, 8 seeds, you've got to have two that are already going to be long shots that you really like.
You have to have some conviction on a team or two. So,
I mean, my biggest question when I was looking at this yesterday was, is minus 130 not a bad price for a one seed?
UConn, Houston, Purdue, and UNC.
I mean, jeez. I feel like
those four teams against the field at minus 130.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's the other way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly make a very decent case for it. Again, those are all, I mean, what, two of those four teams fit the formula?
Yep.
One's on the outside looking in, one a little further out. But you also have other teams that fit the formula a little further down, right? So Auburn in that four seed group at 7-1. But the six seed at 40-1, like if you must take a long shot, that's actually a pretty juicy one.
Yeah, that's where I would go to.
Though, yeah, I mean, 40-1, it's going to be incrementally better than taking any one of those teams at a number. Although check, because maybe not, right? Like, if you think it's BYU, maybe just playing BYU is better.
Yeah, if that's the only one you believe in, really, and you're just thinking, well, I get a few extra teams. No, just bet the BYU number.
But anyway, if you're looking for a long shot, that might be one to consider. Let me just say this as a plug for the podcast. We have not even gotten to the grouping, that includes the team that both Will and Todd landed on independently.
What do you mean we haven't got
as a final
like, is
four
it not
team?
Listed on this graphic?
It is listed on the graphic, but we have not gotten to it.
All right, let's go FAU.
It's not them. Beating the Book Megapod, Beating the Book Podcast, which is this particular episode is as well received as the Vegas lifestyle in the Super Bowl.
Wow, it was amazing a year ago.
It was.
That's all you got to say.
The greatest thing ever a year ago. By the way, I had UConn winning it all. It doesn't even matter what those guys did. We'll come back with Steve Fezzik on the other side.